My guest this week is an author, keynote speaker, learning consultant, and more. Clint Reese has a simple mission: to make you better at everything you do in life and business. On this episode, you'll get a feel for how he helps people and companies do just that. If you enjoyed this episode, go ahead, subscribe, and share with a friend. Thanks. Clint, how's it going? I appreciate you coming on.
Doing good. Thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
All right. I'm going to start this a little different than I typically have. What I typically ask is simply, what are you working on? But I was looking through your LinkedIn, and it seems that you have really discovered like your personal mission and what drives you from a work standpoint as well as personally. So I want to get into that, and then we can get into what you're working on. So okay, how did you sort of figure that out throughout your work career?
You know, that's a good question. It's one that I get asked a lot, and I really don't have the best answer for it, because it just kind of came over the course of just different little tiny things that led me over. But typically the answer I'll give is that my first job was when I was 14. I worked at a little league baseball park, and I, you know, washed dishes, made Frito pie, ate a bunch of Frito pie when nobody was looking. Recently I found out actually that there's no such thing as Frito pie in the North. I was in New York and I gave that answer and they were like, "What's Frito pie?" I was like, "Yeah, I'm never coming back here again." So that was, until I did what I do now, that was my favorite job. And between 14 and the age of about 30, I went from washing dishes to managing multi-million dollar producing consultants on these global projects. And it was really interesting, and I made good money, but I absolutely hated it. And between those, I had worked in every industry and every company that you could imagine. And what happens is people get like your standard onboard training, and then you're just kind of set out to do as best as you can with your career. And people need training and development on how to communicate better and how to be better employees and teammates and leaders. And I just didn't see that happening that much. And so people would burn out fairly quickly. And I ended up developing a passion for public speaking. And I was giving a speech in West Texas, and this lady asked me if I had ever thought about being a trainer. And my answer was, not until the moment you just said it that I thought about that. And I developed a curriculum and came up with all this stuff, and now I absolutely love it, because you have these companies that need training for people and want to invest in their people, and it's really, really fun and really powerful.
You were managing a bunch of other consultants,
right,
that were all over the country internationally. Yeah. As you started to figure out that mission, what did you do then? Did you start looking for something else, or how to do more of that? Or did you already know kind of what direction to take it?
No, it was, I think it was kind of this thought that I had in the back of my mind, is I wish people were trained on how to be better people at work. Because I think what happens is that we are told so often to leave work at work and leave home at home. And that's just not the way our brains work. You know, we take it all with us everywhere we go. And we add levels to people's lives, and we add these memories to people's lives. And what the real sad part of it is if you don't like your job, because you spend so much time there, you kind of don't like your life. So teaching people how to be nicer to people and how to be empathetic and be good leaders at work, that became a passion of mine. And it turned into something that I never thought it would, but I've been very, very fortunate to do what I do.
That's very cool. So you alluded to it. So can you elaborate on what you're doing now?
Yeah.
As far as like emotional intelligence, different things that you're training on?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've I officially started my company a few years ago, and had spent the years prior to that developing the curriculum and coming up with what I would talk about. And then I jumped right out into it, and I've been very, very fortunate to partner with some good companies to do training and speeches. But I've also developed some partnerships with number one, a consulting firm here in Fort Worth called Britton Kalish Group. And so their background is in healthcare. And they're growing and experiencing some really good growth, and it comes from what they've done with their clients in the past. So my role there is I'm a learning leader, and they've taken what they learned from the patient experience and they've applied it to trainings that they do for companies. So it's, you know, it's for me, it's emotional intelligence, it's customer service, it's leadership, it's all the things that kind of go with that. But then at the core of everything I do, my training, my professional development, it usually falls into about three categories. So it's emotional intelligence, leadership, and communication. And you touched on one of those, emotional intelligence. And I think people have talked about that enough where everybody's heard the phrase. But unfortunately, it's with the proliferation of just the word, people don't exactly know what it is. So it's been a lot of fun to go around and kind of share that message and exactly how you apply that in your career and at your job. And like I said, been very fortunate. I partnered with a company called TrainUp, so trainup.com, and they send me on all these trainings around the country, and I get to visit some really cool places, meet some really cool companies, and just you know, tell them how to hopefully be better at work.
Very nice. So you do a training, you do a speech, or I guess a speech leads to the training, or what does that typically look like?
Yeah, that's really funny, because I do keynote speeches, and I do half day or all day training. Some people turn it into 3-4 days. I have one client through TrainUp that is having me out for their third and fourth full days. And so that's 32 hours of training.
That's a lot of training.
Yeah, it's a lot of training. It's a lot of talking. But what's funny is that I'll do a speech and people will see the speech and they'll ask me to come do a training.
Yeah.
And then I'll do a training and people in the training will have some type of association that they work with. And so then I'll get invited to do a speech. And it just keeps bouncing back and forth. So I don't know if it's good that people that see a little bit want more, or if it's bad that people see a lot want a lot less.
Yeah.
So, but we'll see how that works out. But it's very fun. So some of it, you know, I get to just give not necessarily a canned speech, but kind of something similar every time. But then your half day and your full day, and especially when it goes to 4 days, I get to really dive deep with companies. And that's really cool.
Yeah. When we were talking before this, leading up to this, you talked about how you tried to make them different than your traditional presentations and trainings, just because you said it yourself, you typically hated going to them yourself.
Yeah.
So how are you different in that aspect?
Oh, well, thanks for asking that. It's true. I think a lot of trainings that you go to, if you're in a big company and, you know, they bring you in to do some kind of sales training, it's a lot of the kind of the same stuff. Like let's have, you know, a couple little icebreakers and then we'll just talk all day. And it ends up being kind of boring for me. You know, it's a boring PowerPoint presentation. The speakers sometimes aren't very engaging. And so what I do, my passion, and I would say hobby, is stand-up comedy. And so I love injecting as much joke and as much humor as I can into a presentation. I use slides that are completely outside the norm. Usually if a company asks me to send them my PowerPoint presentation before the speech, I get a little bit nervous and I have to put some asterisk in it because my slides are interesting, we'll just say. So I use, instead of just kind of a normal blank PowerPoint with just bullet points on it, I have action figures that are acting out whatever the scene might be. And so I have some really interesting and funny pictures. And then I try to use, as much humor as I can and get people laughing. Because the more you laugh, it just wakes up all the learning centers in your brain. And so I feel like people retain a lot more if you can make it funny and engaging. So I try to do that, and we end up having a good time.
Awesome. You talked about emotional intelligence, mm-hmm. leadership, and communication. Like, what are some companies that like stand out that are really doing this well, or are there some certain things that you're seeing that are the companies are not doing? Kind of across the board, I mean, any big trends that people could take away from this episode that they could implement or at least, or just call you?
Yeah, absolutely. Number one, just call me. But the other thing, so that's a really good question. I think the reason that I've been so fortunate since I started this business is that companies are starting to understand that people want to be developed. If people go through a training and they go through some kind of personal and professional development, they're 70% more likely to stay with that company. So you can thank millennials for that. Millennials get blamed for a lot, but I think millennials have kind of pushed that agenda a little bit, is that, you know, we're here to work for you, but we want to be developed while we're working here. And I think that the companies that are starting to pay attention to that are the companies that you see that are growing that you wouldn't exactly, you wouldn't expect to see them grow. So there's companies that are very successful without ever developing their people, because they have a good product, they have a good message, they have the name recognition, whatever it is, and they'll do just fine, but they burn through people really fast and they turn them over very quickly. And it's because they don't put the investment in the time and the energy into helping those people feel like they're valuable or that they're valued at that company. And so what's really cool is that the companies that never, ever, ever will call me are the companies that need what I do the most. And the companies that do call me are the companies that are already kind of focused on stuff like that. So the issue is trying to figure out how to make the former become the latter and continue going with the latter, because the companies that care about their people are the companies that everybody knows who they are. Mm-hmm. So it's your Googles, it's your Amazon, it's the people that develop the people that work for them. And those are the companies that you see really, really take it to the next level, as opposed to, you know, just your huge companies where everybody's just a number. Mm-hmm. And when you can take care of the people, then everything else takes care of itself.
What sort of results are they seeing outside? Is it just more that 70% better retention? Or is there some other metrics that they look at when evaluating bringing in somebody like yourself?
That's difficult, because it's almost what I do is unquantifiable to a certain degree. So it's hard to say, you know, how did better emotional intelligence affect our bottom line? But when you look back at it, and it's okay, how did a lower retention or lower attrition rate affect our bottom line? How did better teamwork and more efficiency, more productivity affect our bottom line? And so it's hard to put a dollar figure on some of those things. But when people are more satisfied when they walk in the doors every day, then they're naturally going to be more effective, more productive, more, and, you know, take more initiative and just be in better moods. So you get more out of people if they're satisfied when they walk through the doors. And so that's really the value that I add is some of those soft skills and some of the things that people don't necessarily focus on, but that are of utmost value to companies, even though they don't necessarily measure it. So there you go.
Yeah, that makes total sense. One of the other areas that you do a lot of learning and training around is working across generations. Mm-hmm. Why has that become so important?
Well, we're at an interesting time because people are living longer, working longer. You have four, sometimes five generations working side by side. And there's a very distinct line. I would honestly say it's probably the most easy to see between baby boomers and Gen X versus millennials and Gen Z. And so those two different kind of mindsets are very interesting. And what you see a lot of the times is we put these negative stereotypes on groups that we're not in. And basically, it's because you have bad information. So the older generations think the younger generations are entitled and lazy and disloyal. And the younger generations think the older generations think they know it all and have all the and won't share anything. And what's funny is I give kind of similar presentations when I'm doing the generations in the workplace training. And I gave a presentation to a room almost exclusively of baby boomers. And I, you know, went through my whole thing. And at the end of it, I asked them, you know, what are you afraid of for this newer generation coming in? And they said, they don't ask for help. They think they know everything. And if they would just let us mentor them, then they would actually understand things. And what was fascinating is that not even a week later, I gave the exact same presentation at a university. And so everybody in the room was Gen Z or millennials. And I asked them at the end, what are you afraid of about going into the workforce? And they said, the older generations think they know everything. If we ask for questions, they won't help us. They don't mentor us at all. And they just want to let us fail on our own. So if you can figure out how to bridge that communication gap and figure out how to make those generations work better together, then it's ridiculously powerful, because you have the older generation has all the knowledge. The younger generations have the tech savviness to put that knowledge to work a little more efficiently. And especially with companies where there's not a lot of employees, once those older employees retire, if they don't share that information walks out the door with them. Mm-hmm. And so you have to figure out how to get the younger generations to ask questions and engage in some of these mentoring opportunities. And you have to get the older generations to take that initiative as well. So it's a lot about, when I do that training, it's understanding the different mentalities of each generation. So it's, you know, what events took place in the formative years of their life. So for baby boomers, you know, it's the Civil War and it's social justice. And then you go to millennials and it's 9/11 and it's, terrorist attacks. And Gen Z is the first Black president and the decision on gay marriage. And so you have these different mentalities that just affect the way these people work and how they interact with other people. And once you start to understand that, then you break down some of those stereotypes, and it just kind of helps frame the conversation a little bit better. And what's interesting is that when I started, the people that helped me start the business were all older generations, and they didn't think that the generational conversation would be that effective. And slowly but surely, I understood that it was because they were from the older generation. And the reason I say that is because when the older generation would give a training like that, it was all, you know, how do you deal with these awful millennials and how do we fix them? And so when I come in and I, you know, being a millennial myself, and I talk about those issues and help people see what's going on in the minds of other generations, I think it just helps frame the conversation a little bit, so people work a little more effectively and kind of bridge that gap.
Yeah, there's a ton there. I mean, you have that communication piece. Like, in your trainings, do you break down like how to better communicate amongst the two of them?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's a big part of it. You have to, if the conversations don't happen naturally, and even after my training, it doesn't mean that as soon as I'm done talking, all of a sudden the baby boomers are going to be like, oh yeah, let's go help them. We're fixed. it's more of a, you have to force that interaction sometimes. And so it's about setting up the opportunities for that to happen. So you encourage your older generations to ask the younger generations if they're struggling, because that's a difficult thing. I mean, the reason millennials get the label of disloyal is it's because when they came into the workforce was at the, you know, during the recession, and they saw all their parents get fired and terminated and retirement squandered and all this stuff. And so we have this kind of barrier against companies. And so you have to figure out how to take that down. And I think forcing people to have those conversations, I think, is very effective. But it is about communicating with empathy. I mean, that's the one thing that's kind of the underlying message of just about all my training is have a level of empathy and understand that everybody has a backpack full of their life events or their journey that's behind them. And it's, you know, it's about getting to know people and not just talking about work. It's understanding the people that are doing the work. And that, I think, is probably the best message for all of them.
you hit on it there. I mean, what goes into like a course on emotional intelligence or leading across generations? Like, you obviously have spent a ton of time researching this, yeah. but like, where do you put that together? Through a number of different sources, books? How do you even come up with a curriculum?
Yeah, absolutely. It's I always joke that basically my training is just really long, funny book reports. And it's essentially I'll read as much as I can, watch as many TED Talks as I can, listen to as many podcasts as I can, because I'm always looking for different opinions on how to do something or different opinions. You know, I love philosophical debates so that people can, you know, you start to see how different mentalities come to be. And when I put it all together, it's really, I try to tailor it, especially if I'm doing a long training about something, I'll try to tailor it to whatever that company needs. So, you know, if they say they have interdepartmental communication issues, well, it's usually because they have stopped caring about what's outside of their group and only caring about their group. So the conversation of empathy comes in, and being self-aware and managing your emotions and eliminating your ego before you go into conversations. Because at the end of the day, what businesses should have is a shared vision or a shared goal. And so you're all on the same team. And what happens a lot is you kind of get that internal politics, you can get that competition. So it's a matter of understanding where people are coming from, because everybody gets a little scared. And that's not what we would like to admit about ourselves. But we go to work with a lot of fear that we're going to screw up and somebody's going to notice, or fear that our idea won't be the one that wins, or our team will be the one that fails. And what you have to create through empathy and through some of these trainings is that you're all on the same team. And if you can just approach it in that way, then you'll achieve a lot more if you can just be open to new ideas and new thoughts.
I like it. What are a few ways, is it empathy you said is the underlying? What is one way that just about any company can improve from probably a communication or leadership standpoint? Probably the empathy, but
yeah, and it's not an overnight thing. You know, I always use the analogy that when I'm done with the training, all I've given you is an axe. And if there's a tree that's still standing in your way, it's not going to fall down unless you start swinging.
Yeah.
And so what I give people is a toolkit of ways that they can improve their emotional intelligence. So it'll be, you know, there's the four tenets of emotional intelligence. It's self-awareness, self-management, social awareness and relationship management. And so I go through a list. There's a lot of ways that you can improve that. But empathy is a difficult thing to improve if you don't work at it. A lot of times what we see is, especially for emotional intelligence, if you look at a company, let's say it's a big company, the skill of emotional intelligence is very, very important to somebody's long-term success. And what happens is at the entry level to kind of upper middle management, you see emotional intelligence go up as people move up through the ladder. And what happens, there's a tipping point at the end where that falls off dramatically. So you have a lot of CEOs and your higher level executives that have, you know, little to none emotional intelligence. And it's because they don't practice it. It's the only part of your personality that can grow or can get better or can fall off if you don't work on it. And so people that don't work around people or don't initiate conversations with people lose that emotional intelligence.
That's interesting.
So it's all about putting that together and getting people to work better together.
Very interesting point. I know failure is just a giant part of anybody's career and business. You've hit on it a little bit. Do you have any failures that have stuck out throughout your career that really help shape and guide your, I guess, personal mission and where you're at today?
Oh, wow. That's a deep question. You know, I early on in my career, after I went through kind of retail sales and working my way up in the sales world, I went to work for a staffing company. And I felt really lucky that I'd got the opportunity because I knew that a lot of people made a lot of money there. And so I thought that that was going to be really cool. And I just, in all honesty, if I look back at it, I just wasn't mature enough for that role yet. And that was probably a huge learning opportunity for me. I didn't take advantage of it. And so that was a failure that I had that I think really helped shape where I am now, because I didn't take the chance to really be better at what I was doing. I just kind of was a victim of my own failure, and I didn't help myself out of it. And I think that helped shape a lot of what I do now, because I noticed some of the way that they did things and some of the leadership that they had there. And so, you know, some of it I took on, a lot of it I told people to never do it that way, but it was a good learning experience. So that was a big failure I had, set me back in my career for a while, but you know, I learned a lot from it, and I'm here today because of it. So I'm really happy about that one.
Just curious, what did you do right after that?
Right after that. Wow. So that was kind of a refocus and a rebuilding. I went back to something that was comfortable to me and doing retail sales, just to, you know, more or less keep the lights on. But you can learn a lot. You can learn a lot through failure and through building yourself back up. So it was kind of a reset and a new look at it. And I almost kind of started back a little bit and rebuilt the exact same career and just did a better job at it the second time.
Very cool. Yeah. We can wrap up here with a couple easy ones. Where can people find you?
You can find me at clintreese.com, clintreese.com. I'm on the LinkedIn machine, the Instagram machine, and the Facebook machine, all at Clint Reese PDT.
Awesome. We can wrap up with this one. What has been the biggest surprise in sort of going all in on consulting and doing your own thing the past few years?
The biggest surprise has been, and not to make this sound like I'm being braggadocious, the biggest surprise is how quickly and how successfully everything's gone. I don't know if it's timing, if it's, you know, shout out to millennials that are pushing the envelope at their organizations to do more training and development, but I really thought that it would take me a long time to get going. And when I started, I actually even took a part-time job working at Starbucks just to keep a little bit of money coming in and to have insurance and all that stuff. But I was able to leave that and focus on what I do now very quickly. And I think that's been the biggest surprise. But it's also surprising how much people tell me that they need it. And I to clarify that, I'll tell somebody what I do, and everybody that I say that to is like, oh, we need that at this company, or oh, we need that. I could use you at my last business, or you know, whatever that is. And so I think there's a huge need for it, and I think that's been the most surprising.
Yeah, that's good for you.
Yeah.
Just curious, like, obviously overnight successes are not overnight.
Right.
When you say it's been a success, was that 2 months? Was that 2 years? Like, can you put a little context around
it? Absolutely. So I would say the first 6 months that I started, it was really, really a struggle. Towards the end of that, 6 months, you know, I started having the thoughts of maybe I did the wrong thing, or maybe it's not the right time, or, you know, I'm going to have to go find a different position. And so that's a kind of a dark and scary place to be in. And then all of a sudden it just, everything clicked. And, you know, now I'm flying around the country talking to organizations about being better people. It's really interesting. So yeah, I'd say about 6 months before it really started, and now it's too much to keep up with, which is a good problem.
That is a good problem to have. Clint, I appreciate you coming on.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for giving the show a listen. Please do me a favor before you stop listening. Subscribe on whatever platform you're on. If you loved it so much and you've already subscribed, share this episode with a friend. Thanks again, and I'll see you next week.
Matt McGee is an employee of Frost Insurance. All opinions shared by Matt or guests of the Healthy Conversations podcast are solely their own and do not reflect the opinions of Frost Insurance or Frost Bank. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon for insurance, banking, or investment advice. Healthy Conversations with Matt McGee is brought to you by Straight Up Podcasts.